If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You got to have the right relationships. Everything in this business is about relationships.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Joe Mueller is an active investor in the Chicago area, mainly focusing on single-family homes and small multi-units. Joe owns Tanis Group Realty, Investors Title Services, and RE Invest Homes LLC, and holds his real estate broker's license in Illinois. Investors Title Services caters to investor clients by facilitating mainly off-market, wholesale deals of multi and single-family homes at discount pricing. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How are things in Chicago today?
Cold.
Cold. All right. There you go. Hey, I'm excited to have you on. Chicago, and especially investing in Illinois. You know, I hear a lot of people are fleeing from investing in your state. And so I want to hear from somebody boots on the ground, you know, how things are in Illinois. But before we get to that, if you can kind of give us a background of where you started, where are you now, and how you got there?
Yeah, so I started back in 2001 or so, buying at the auction block for sheriff sales. I had an interest coming right out of high school in investing in real estate. So I was able to pull together some money through friends and family and figure out the foreclosure process. And that's kind of where I got going, you know, started buying out there, competing with the big dogs, and, you know, turned it into something.
So that's interesting. Just out of high school, you said, hey, I've got an interest in real estate. I know I'm going to go buy foreclosures.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. That's kind of a big, I mean, that's a big gamble. You know, I cut my teeth as well buying foreclosures. There's a lot of unknowns in that. How did you educate yourself and prevent from making just some catastrophic mistakes?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, it all kind of started with a late night infomercial that piqued my curiosity and led me down a path to like, I got to figure this out.
Right.
I got more about how this works. So I started reading anything I could get my hands on. I started studying the newspaper because back then we actually had papers where it advertised foreclosures. I started attending the auctions again. So I'm 18, 19 years old, just seeing how the process worked and hearing everyone discuss it. And, you know, you got the trustee giving the sale, you got the guys that are, you know, bidding on the property and, you know, kind of poking around them a little bit and trying to start conversations, which wasn't that easy because it's competitive, right?
Right.
Competitive now, it was competitive then. And eventually to the point where I'm driving past the properties that are getting advertised for sale, that I'm doing as much research as I could in advance, which there was no, you know, Zillow back then, right?
Right. So,
talking to brokers. At the time, I didn't have a real estate license, but you know, I found a couple brokers that were willing to help out a little bit. I did find one guy at the auction sales that would be nice enough to have a conversation with me and give me a little bit of insight.
Right.
And then I came down to biting the bullet, man, and you know, putting a bid in, and I got lucky on my first one. It was like a rescheduled foreclosure sale that had previously been scheduled a couple weeks prior, and nobody showed up for it but me.
Wow. Good for you.
I was paying attention. I was like, yep, dollar over. You know, the guy, the auctioneer, we'll call him, looked at me and said, okay, man, yeah, it's yours. So I went through that process again and again. And I actually got quite intimate with the process over time because I became licensed. So I was running my own side of, you know, the brokerage business at that point, started a company brokering and started listing REOs for banks. So we did over 3,000 REOs through that whole upswing after 2000, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, sold a bunch to hedge funds. And yeah, we've had a lot of property pass through these doors.
Right. That's amazing. So you went from buying single family, you know, one at a time, and then decided that you could really scale. And then you took it to the point where obviously the banks are coming to you saying, hey, will you help us dispose of our excess inventory?
Yep. I met a banker at one of the auctions I was at bidding on a property. He started asking me questions about the market. He was from out of state. Back then, again, they used to bid, you know, secondary mortgages would come out and bid on these properties in person sometimes. Made friends with the guy. He gave me my first REO listing.
Gotcha. Explain to our listeners, if you will. I understand what you just said because I used to buy foreclosures. But when you say that the banks would come out and bid on the second mortgages, what does that mean?
So when a first mortgage, which would be normally the larger of the two, but the initially recorded mortgage when somebody buys a house is known as the first or first position, we'll call it. And a second position mortgage or second mortgage is something when maybe you borrowed 80% of the first mortgage was put down by, let's say, you know, ABC Bank, and then you still only had 5% down. So a secondary lender came in and put down the additional 15 and you put down 5. So what happens in a foreclosure is when that first position mortgage starts to foreclose, the second position loses their interest. So what'll happen is sometimes these banks will come out and say, well, wait a second, you know, we've got, let's say $50,000 in a mortgage invested in this property or with this borrower. And, you know, we're getting foreclosed down. We're going to lose all of that. Maybe we should go bid on it ourselves or at least bid up that price so we can get our money back. The first position gets paid first at an auction. And then whatever excess gets bid up would go towards, you know, the second position or even a third. I mean, again, back in the crash, before the crash, the loans they were giving out, they had second mortgages, third mortgages. People were putting zero money down. I mean, it was crazy time. So
sure.
Not.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's wild. And so those banks would show up and say, hey, we don't lose our interest in this, because they could pay off the first. They could afford to pay off the first, retain their rights as the second, and still maybe be underneath the fair market value of the property. So they could turn around and sell the house, and then they get to, you know, obviously pay themselves back. I mean, at worst case scenario, they don't lose any money on it. Best case scenario, they might even make some money.
Right. Correct. That was the goal, right? So I made a couple contacts at the auction itself and was able to start building what I would say was a pretty robust REO business, which, you know, at this point we've kind of refocused where we're at, but at the time it was a good deal for a long time. And, you know, I felt initially like, hey, I might get first crack at some of these opportunities. That's why I got into it. But the reality was that it's not the case at all, because the brokers that, you know, that are working for the banks cannot buy the properties themselves. The intent, and it still worked out very well. We're still able to buy foreclosures at the time from banks that we didn't work for. The brokerage itself is handling REO properties, manages REO. We still do that to this day. I refocused my efforts into the investing side again, which is where I originally started. Once I would say 2013-14 rolled around, there was still plenty of opportunity, and kind of got into wholesaling opportunities more and more acquisition strategies for us.
That was more on the single family side. Is that where you've stayed, or have you added multifamily and some other commercial assets to your portfolio?
Small amount of multifamily and commercial, yes. I would say the main focus is still in single family and multi-unit. When I say multi, you know, 4 units or less. But we do have multifamily in the portfolio as well as commercial, just not the main focus, I would say.
Gotcha. But yeah, you found a way to grow your company that kind of fits what your investing goals are. Can you walk us through some of the maybe mistakes you made along the way or challenges you faced as you grew?
Yeah, I mean, first thing is leverage. I would say you got to have the right relationships. And this is probably a little takeaway for your listeners, is everything in this business is about relationships. I mean, I'm just about 20 years in, and having the availability of a private lender that, you know, somebody you've built a relationship with that can give you cash to purchase a property in 2 weeks, or having a bank that can refinance you when you, you know, bought a 4-unit property and you've rehabbed it and you need to burr strategy and get out of it. You know, that's a huge part of the business. Don't take that for granted, and be careful what you're leveraging would be my other piece of advice. I should say how you're leveraging. Cash out refinances can be dangerous. You know, make sure your numbers work. You know, a lot of people have a tendency to, you know, overanalyze, I would say, but when it comes down to, you know, opportunity, they get driven by emotion and they get excited about something, or they see this awesome opportunity for something without really knowing the true risks that are involved. What that really comes back to is what your leverage looks like, because everything can work depending on how much leverage you have. When I say leverage, I should say financing.
Gotcha.
You know, make sure if you're going to do any type of cash out or a burr, that the numbers are always going to make sense no matter what.
And what you mean by that is that if you do a cash out refi and you end up basically over leveraging the property. We saw a lot of that, you know, from 05 to 08, and that's where a lot of investors really lost their shirts.
Yes. And I think those are lessons that quickly get forgotten. And I just want to make sure that when even the investors we work with here, they're understanding the fact that today's a good day, right? But tomorrow holds something different. And make sure that your cash flow numbers really work. I mean, again, we've got this corona pandemic going on. You've got some people that are holding these, I would say, potentially hostile tenants that refuse to pay. I mean, I'll be honest, we have one as well.
Sure.
And they won't leave and you can't get them out. I mean, how is that going to look if you multiply that times 10 or times 20, or you've got an apartment building that's got, you know, 24 units and half the people are in that same boat? you know, we got to plan for these things. And I understand the government's, you know, offered some type of incentivization, obviously, to landlords to a degree. You know, you can get some loans and some grants and things like that. And, you know, we've pursued those as well. But, you know, to me, that's a little bit of like icing on the cake. That's nice, but we still are prepared in case things get worse.
What does prepared look like for you?
Stockpiling some cash, making sure that we've got it, you know, in case something goes even worse with, you know, potentially with financing and the banking system. I mean, loans can be called due. Been through that once already with several apartment buildings we've owned. What happens if the bank calls you and says, yeah, we're no longer in the business of working with a small investor who's got less than 100 units, right? We want our $1.1 million back.
Wow. What do you do? What did you do?
Relationships, right? So I was in that exact situation. I was able to refinance with a small local bank, which would also be another tidbit I'd offer to the listeners is big banks aren't always better. And I'm sure this is, you know, your experience in the multifamily space will tell you the same thing. I mean, somebody you can walk into their office, shake their hand or grab a cup of coffee and a beer with or have lunch on a routine basis, that's the guy you want to work with. Even if the program isn't maybe the best to what you think you should be able to get comparatively to what you've researched or read, somebody like that is going to have your back.
And that's right.
Person you need to have a relationship with when you get into this business, because those people care and they want to keep, they want to maintain that. And that's also how they eat. So they want to keep eating.
That's absolutely right. The summary of basically your story is relationships, the people that you've worked alongside and the people that going from auctions forward, you know, finding those people along the way that can help not just guide you, but also be key industry partners.
That's what I want to offer to, you know, the listener is, you know, there's a lot of information out there. There's YouTube and there's, you know, they call it YouTube University, right? I'm not saying dish out your last, you know, $5,000 to somebody, some type of guru, because he's, you know, feeding you aspirations of grandeur. But what I am saying is interview some people and find somebody that can mentor you along the way if you're serious about getting started in this business and staying in this business, because those relationships are key. I mean,
right.
You know, picking up the phone and have the availability to call someone and say, hey, man, I have a situation, you know, what are you doing or what have you done about this type of similar thing? And having an answer and somebody that can guide you down that path is hugely important.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah. If you're listening to this, that's a key piece of advice. If you could take anything home from this, hear what was just said. Tell us about investing in the Chicago area. I've just, you know, nothing against Chicago. I love Chicago. It's one of my favorite cities. But, you know, I've heard some kind of mixed emotions regarding that, especially when it comes to taxation and things like that. So can you walk us through that?
Absolutely. Taxes are high here. A lot of oversight, a lot of politics. You know, every municipality in the Chicagoland area is like its own little island. So they all operate differently. You can buy a property in, you know, we'll call it Bellwood, which is, you know, on the outskirts of the city of Chicago, and go through one process and have an escrow repair of $10,000 that needs to be put up before you even close that the city holds on to while you're doing your repairs, and hopefully will give you that money back when they approve your permits and you get the work done. And then you walk, you know, 5 miles to the east, and you've got a completely different process where it's like you walk in, buy a transfer stamp, you're out, and there's no permits needing to be pulled at all. So again, goes back to kind of maybe having some guidance from people that know what they're doing, being prepared for the fact that in Chicago, taxes are high. They continue to rise, you know, continue to go up, unfortunately.
Right.
The population is declining, but you know, we're a major metropolitan area, obviously. So there's always industry here. There's always people coming here. Though it may be declining in general, I think a lot of that's a baby boomer aspect as well. They're looking for, you know, the sunshine states and things like that where taxes are less, or maybe there's no state taxes, you know, Florida, for example. But we're still robust as far as the real estate industry here. I mean, there is a lot of, there's new construction going in. There's a lot of investors buying. There's a lot of competitiveness here. And the bonus to that is our rents are pretty healthy as well. So you can cash flow decently on a property here, you know, $400-$600 a month just on a single family if you buy right.
Gotcha. So it really, again, you know, not to harp the same point, but it sounds like, you know, knowing the right people in the right municipalities that understand the logistics of how to get through the process is important.
Yeah. And there's just like everywhere, right? There's a lot of local RIAs. Everybody's willing to help out or give you some piece of advice. I mean, everybody loves to hear themselves talk. So you ask them. But yeah, I mean, you can, you know, being such a large, you know, large city, you know, having the availability of you know, people is the easy part, right? And there's
right.
A lot of knowledge here. So my piece of advice if people are looking to invest in Chicago would be, again, find somebody that's local that is active in the market and start asking some questions. And you know, we get calls like that all the time where people are just getting started in wholesaling or they're getting started in building a rental portfolio. And of course, I take calls and say, yeah, man, here's what you need to look out for in that area, for example.
That's awesome. Joe, you've given us some excellent pieces of advice here today. As we get into the final four, if you were to distill everything you know into one piece of advice and you're giving this to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Absorb everything, read as much as you can. I'll use that as a general term, right? But more specifically, you know, there's some great podcasts out there. You know, you've got a podcast going, great guests, great information coming out. All that free information is huge. I mean, constantly researching and listening and learning. Don't stop.
That's awesome. What's one way that you stay on top of your game?
That's exactly what I just said. I mean, I was reading an article this morning on the 20 top markets in the U.S. and studying it because we're actively looking for other markets to start wholesaling in. So I'm looking at, you know, some areas in Ohio and Tennessee. We've actually, you know, done some work in Birmingham already. And just continuing to research and build that knowledge base, because that's something you can retain forever. And it's never going to make you, you know, it's always going to make you a stronger investor.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to giving back, what's one way you make the world a better place?
So this would be related to investing as well. This year, I started a free mentoring group for some local investors. It's called the 2020 Partnership. And we're basic. When I say we, it's we have a team here. I have a business partner on the wholesale side of my business. And we're actively mentoring these individuals at no cost to get started in the business itself. And it's been greatly rewarding, not only on a personal level, but also financially, because we've been able to do a bunch of deals with some of these guys and gals and get them started in the business. And that's probably with a feather in my cap for this year.
That's such a rarity. I mean, there are people out there that are charging tens of thousands of dollars, you know, teaching the same exact things that you're giving away for free. So good for you both for rewarding just the rewards, you know, personally for, you know, giving back, but also, you know, obviously, like you said, as you build these networks, you're probably also rewarding, you know, yourself financially when they bring deals across the table. So it's a win-win.
Exactly. You hit it on the head. That's exactly what's been going on. And it's amazing. It's been great to build these relationships and network with more people, and opportunity presents itself.
Right. Absolutely. Joe, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
So we have a title company that we run, and I'll give out that website just because it's just an easy general place and it kind of sums up a lot of what we do here. And that's www.investorstitleservicesllc.com.
Gotcha. Joe, thanks for coming on today. Certainly appreciate it. Loved your nuggets of wisdom. Yeah, everything you shared with us has been great. So certainly appreciate it and look forward to doing this again sometime soon.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
For your time.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.